What do you mean? Caroline sighed. General Paraith has been reporting to my father that they have started to just take days off. Drinking and carousing, presumably. One day they fail to report for duty. The next day they just turn up and act like nothing is wrong. Paraith disciplined them at the start, but the problem is so widespread now that he cannot afford to. If General Jashtar cannot stop the blind, we will need every man we can get.
Let's hope it doesn't come to that, said Caden.
Caroline turned to him. He felt his heart skip at how close she was standing. That's what everyone else is saying, though, and that's why I'm worried, she said in a low tone. My father, the houses, they're so confident that our advantage in numbers is all that matters. And until last night I might have agreed with them. But now... She shivered, shaking her head. I know Layman Cardi and my uncle have been preparing the city for a siege since the first day they heard about the blind. So I suppose we at least have that. But aside from those two, everyone else just seems to think that this invasion is a chance to play politics.
Caden glanced across at her. Caroline's tone was bitter.
How so?
Caroline hesitated, then grimaced.
Thanks to my father's instability, I've heard rumor of at least two of the great houses planning for the possibility of ruling. Not planning to rule, of course, that would be treason, but making sure that if there is an empty throne in the near future, they would be nearby to sit in it.
She shrugged.
And I'm a complication to those sort of plans, as you can imagine.
Caden looked at her in disbelief.
Surely they wouldn't risk making things even more unstable. Not now. You really haven't spent much time around men of power, have you?
Caroline said with wry amusement.
Take last night. In your place, half of the nobility would have demanded a heavy reward for saving me, and the other half would have just let me die.
She smiled, though with a hint of sadness. Caden looked at her with horror.
I'm sorry, he said sincerely. That must be hard. Don't misunderstand, Caden. I'm a princess. There are plenty of benefits, too. I don't have to face many of the everyday trials that most people go through.
Caroline's smile faded.
But at times like this, yes, it can be hard.
They watched the soldiers for a while longer, then Caroline said,
Who do you think they are?
She made a vague gesture to the north. Caden paused to think.
I believe what Tayrus believes, he said after a moment, that these men have been sent by our kind of aid.
The princess nodded.
There was something wrong about that armor last night. It made me feel sick just being in contact with it.
Then you believe too? The princess shook her head slowly.
I don't know. It all still seems so surreal. A bedtime story brought to life.
She looked at him, expression curious.
Why do you believe?
Caden shrugged.
I just know, he said quietly. Somehow I know that he's not just a myth. When I think of him, I think of someone to be feared.
He sighed.
I seem to know a lot of things that no one else does, though.
Caroline considered.
Perhaps that's why your memories were removed, she suggested. Perhaps you found out too much about Darkhan Dvaid?
Caden rubbed his forehead.
Maybe.
It was similar to Tayrus's suggestion. It could certainly explain why the invaders seemed to be after him. Yet he didn't think it was correct. But then he couldn't even give a reason as to why he thought that. It was all very confusing. Caroline saw his disconsolate expression and hesitantly reached a hand out, laying it on his forearm.
Whatever it is, I'm sure you will get to the bottom of it.
Caden's breath caught, and he froze, as if Caroline were a bird he could accidentally scare off with a sudden movement. The princess didn't remove her hand straight away, and for a long moment they just stood there, watching the soldiers. Then there were footsteps behind them, and Caroline turned smoothly, letting her hand slip to her side again. Caden turned as well, cringing to see Aelric striding towards them. With the possible exception of the king or the North Warden, Aelric was the last person he'd wanted to see him with the princess. He'd heard the young swordsman talk of her often enough over the past month or so to know that he was hopelessly in love with her. The black expression on his face as he looked at Caden did nothing to dispel that notion.
"Your Highness," said Aelric stiffly, bowing to Caroline, "I've been looking everywhere for you. Your uncle was most upset when he discovered you had dismissed your guards, especially to wander off in the early hours of the morning with a servant."
He shot an accusatory glare at Caden.
"I thought it best to find you before he did, lest he start taking too close an interest in who it is you're with."
Caroline hesitated, for a moment looking like she was going to protest. Then she gave an exasperated sigh.
"Very well," she turned to Caden. "I'm sorry, but I really should go."
Caden smiled.
"I have no doubt you have more important things to do, Your Highness. I'm honored to have received as much time as I have."
Caroline smiled at him warmly.
"I hope we can talk again," she said. "Soon."
With a final, irritable glare at Aelric, she walked back towards the palace. Aelric made as if to follow, then stopped, frowning. He turned back to Caden.
"What was that all about then?" he asked.
There was nothing untoward in the question or his demeanor, but Caden could sense the underlying tension. Caden gave an awkward shrug.
"The princess offered to show me around the palace."
Aelric scowled openly now.
"That's not what I meant."
His eyes narrowed.
"Yesterday, she could barely stand the sight of you. Now she's talking to you like you're her best friend."
Caden breathed a sigh of relief. It at least sounded like Aelric had not seen Caroline's hand on his arm, however brief it had been. Caden gestured, indicating ignorance.
"I don't know why she changed her mind."
Aelric stared at him for a few seconds in silence.
"Very well," he said eventually. "But let me make this clear."
He leaned forward, lowering his voice.
"If I find out you're using some sort of augur power to influence her, I will end this."
He looked conflicted.
"I have no wish to see you harmed, Caden. I believe that there is something special about you. But if it means protecting Caroline, I won't hesitate to tell Elosian and the king about you."
Without anything further, he spun on his heel and stalked off, leaving Caden to stare after him worriedly.
Chapter 44. Davian's stomach rumbled as he walked into the tavern. The smell of stewing meat dragged him forward, despite knowing he didn't have enough coin in his pocket to pay for it. He'd covered a lot of ground over the past week, and now he estimated that at the same pace he was only a few days away from Ilinalan itself. Fortifying his body with essence had given him stamina he'd once only dreamed of. Whenever he began to tire, he simply drew more from the world around him. He'd slept twice since leaving Dailanus, both times only briefly, and more because he was worried about the effects of staying awake for so long than because he needed to. The one thing Essence hadn't been able to do, however, was stop him from being hungry. His stomach growled again, sucking at his insides. He glanced around. The village was small, and so was the tavern. There were only a few patrons tonight, mostly farmers from the looks of them.
"Evening, friend."
A pretty girl planted herself in front of him.
"Can I help you?"
Davian grimaced. He knew how he looked, disheveled, clothes ragged, a pack on his back that was clearly empty. More like a potential thief than a customer.
"I'm out of coin," he admitted, "but I'm willing to work for a meal. Anything you need doing. You don't have to feed me until after I'm done, but..."
"That's fine," the girl's expression softened. "We'll work something out later. You look exhausted. Take a seat and I'll see what Cook has to spare."
Davian gave her a grateful smile in return. The girl was striking, with long legs and green eyes that seemed to shine in the firelight. For a second, she seemed almost familiar, though he couldn't say whom she reminded him of. He collapsed into the nearest chair, relieved to rest, despite knowing he didn't need it. It wasn't too long before the serving girl was back, placing a large plate of steaming meat and vegetables in front of him. Davian looked at it in astonishment. At the few places that had been willing to trade food for work, the meals had been stingy at best.
"I can't tell you how much I appreciate this," he said sincerely.
"Times being what they are, we can all use a little help."
Davian nodded, his expression serious. He'd heard about the invaders at the first big town he'd come across after Dylanus, and he'd pushed himself hard ever since. He had abilities now, a way to help Weir and the others, help fight whatever was coming from the boundary. He had to get to Elinalon before it was too late.
"Any word on the invasion?" he asked between mouthfuls.
"Folk are saying King Andrus has sent out troops, but a lot of people are getting out of the city."
The girl flashed him a pretty smile, sliding into the chair opposite him. Davian paused mid-mouthful, suddenly aware of just how attractive the girl was. Her tight-fitting outfit showed off her full figure to good effect, and he forced himself to focus on his plate as she leaned forward.
"That's good the king is sending troops," he said, a little distracted.
Then he remembered his vision, the one from Dylanus, and grimaced.
"Hopefully."
"Hopefully,"
agreed the girl with an easy smile, amusement dancing in her eyes.
"I'm Ishell. You can call me Shell."
"Nice to meet you, Shell.
I'm Davin. Davian."
Davian shook his head, flushing as he corrected himself. His mind was sluggish. Ishell's smile changed, and she looked sad.
"You don't remember me, do you?"
Davian frowned. He opened his mouth to ask what she was talking about, but suddenly his tongue seemed thicker than usual, and the only sound that came out was an odd gurgling. He tried to focus on Ishell's face, but everything seemed blurry. With a rising panic, he realized the expression on her face had not been sadness. It had been guilt. He tried to stand, but the hard wooden floor of the tavern rushed up to meet him. Everything faded. Davian shook his head, then groaned at the motion. His skull felt as though it were about to split in two, and movement seemed to only make matters worse. His mouth was dry and his eyelids gummed, but when he tried to move his hands to rub his face, he found that they were tied to his sides. He turned his head, looking around blearily from his position on the bed. The room he was in was nondescript. The bed and a couple of chairs were the only pieces of furniture that he could see. Otherwise, the timber floors and walls were bare. A small window provided what little light there was, the illumination clearly originating from a street lamp, indicating that it was still night. Vaguely, he began recalling the events of earlier in the evening. Ishell had clearly drugged him with something, why he had no idea, but if she believed she could keep him tied up, then she was going to be surprised. He closed his eyes, reaching out with Khan. There were sources of essence everywhere, including people, but he chose to draw it from the fire that burned in the kitchen. He only needed a little, not even enough to extinguish the flames. He solidified the essence, made it razor sharp, and then sliced through his bonds, grimacing as he remembered where he'd learnt that trick. Once free, he stood and stretched muscles stiff from disuse, feeling almost casual as he surveyed his surroundings. Absently, he realized he had a shackle around his arm. It made little difference to him. It only stopped essence being drawn from within, something he couldn't do anyway. But it was an irritation. He concentrated for a moment, intrigued. The shackle was just a layer of Khan, containing essence within the body. Of course. He pushed at the metal on his arm with Khan for a few moments, experimenting. The shackle suddenly retracted, falling to the floor with a clatter. He grinned to himself. He strode to the door, drawing a little more essence from the fireplace to ease the ache in his muscles. Immediately they felt looser, stronger. He reached for the door handle.
"Very impressive,"
came a voice from behind him. He spun, ready to defend himself. A man stood in the corner of the room. Davian was certain he had not been there a moment ago.
"Who are you?"
Davian drew in the remaining essence from the fire, as well as a little from the heat of the kettle that had been boiling atop it. Not much, but enough to do some damage if required.
"Why did you take me prisoner?"
The man smiled. "Prisoner?" he sighed. "I must apologize for Ishel's less than subtle method of delaying you. She had strict instructions to keep you here until I arrived. I'm afraid she was a little overzealous." Davian scowled. "You haven't answered my question." The man sighed again.
"My name is Drisken Thrall. I am an elder from Tol Shen," he said, offering his hand.
When Davian didn't shake it, he dropped it with an impatient roll of his eyes.
"You're not a prisoner. You are here for me to make you an offer, nothing more. All I ask is that you hear what I have to say, and then you may continue on your journey."
Davian gave him a suspicious glare. "Very well." He concentrated, pushing through Khan and searching out Drisken's mind. He would find out exactly what this man intended before he agreed to anything. As he stretched out, though, he found himself blocked by an invisible barrier. He frowned, probing the shield, trying to push past it, but it was no use. Drisken's mind was being protected by another source of Khan. Drisken saw the surprise on his face and smiled.
"As I said before, impressive," he said thoughtfully.
He glanced towards the door.
"You can show yourself now, Shell."
Davian turned, expecting to see the door swing open. Instead, there was a shimmering in the air, like a mirage in the desert. In an instant, Ishel stood before them, having seemingly appeared from nowhere. Davian took a half step back.
"Haven't seen that one?"
the young woman asked with a cheeky grin. Davian's eyes widened.
"You're an augur?"
It was the only thing that made sense. Essence alone couldn't make someone invisible, he was certain. Ishel must have been using Khan somehow. She'd been the reason he couldn't read Drisken, too, no doubt.
"Surprise," said Ishel.
Davian stared at her for a moment.
"You drugged me," he said, his tone accusatory. His head was beginning to clear of the effects of whatever she had given him, but he was still a little foggy.
Ishel made a face.
"I had to make sure you didn't go anywhere. Drisken was only a few hours away, but you have a nasty habit of disappearing for long periods of time."
Drisken waved his hand dismissively.
"We'll get to that later," he said. "Suffice to say, we know who you are, Davian."
Davian leaned forward. "And who is we?" He focused on the strange man. He'd know if they lied to him, at least, even if they tried to mask it.
"The Signari. You might know of us as the Prefects," replied Drisken. "We serve the augurs, are their eyes and ears, carry out their wishes, and search out new augurs when they appear."
Davian's eyebrows rose.
"The Signari?" he said dubiously. "I've heard this story before." "It's the truth," supplied Ishel. "I'd heard rumors about them for years before they found me."
"At the beginning of the Unseen War, we went into hiding," continued Drisken. "But we kept watch. We waited. When one augur dies, another is born within a few years. That is the cycle. So we knew that on that night, when the war began, new augurs would soon be brought into the world. We have been vigilant ever since."
Davian frowned.
"Let's say I believe you, at least for the moment. How did you find me?"
"Talmael." Drisken watched him closely. "A man there of somewhat unsavory repute helped two young boys across the border into Desriel. He robbed them, but immediately afterward he collapsed, almost died. 3 days later he awoke with no memory of the incident at all, and 2 years of his life missing into the bargain."
Drisken shrugged.
"Talmiel is a superstitious town at the best of times.
Word spread, and one of my men heard the tale. From there, we managed to piece together your journey as far as Thrindar.
Davian grunted.
And after that?
I found you,
spoke up Michelle.
Shell has an unusual gift, even for an augur. One touch, and she can know where someone is for the rest of their life, explained Driskin.
Davian stared at the young woman.
I remember you,
he said suddenly, eyes widening.
The girl from the market. I bumped into you, knocked you over.
Ishel smiled and Davian sighed.
Or so it seemed.
Ishel leaned forward.
I tracked you all the way to Dailanus, but once you entered the city, it was like you just vanished. We knew you were on your way to Andara, so I waited here, assuming you'd come along this road eventually.
She scowled.
Waited here in this backwater village for a month. A month! I was only days away from leaving when I felt you again.
Her eyes narrowed as she stared at him.
How did you do it? I've never had anyone disappear from my tracking before.
Maybe I'm just special, said Davian.
Ishel made a face at him and he restrained a smile, relaxing a little. Whatever their methods, he was beginning to believe that these people had no intention of harming him. Davian leaned back.
So, how many augurs have you found thus far?
Driskin shifted.
Including you and Ishel?
Two.
He held up his hand.
Understand, this is no easy task. It was difficult enough back when the augurs were ruling. It's 1,000 times harder now that the treaty exists.
I suppose I can see that, Davian conceded. He crossed his arms.
So, you're going to make me an offer?
Come with us.
It was Ishel, her voice pleading.
Help me find others like us, Davian. We can teach them. We can teach each other.
Davian shook his head.
To what end? This invasion came from Talon Gol, said Driskin seriously. We don't know much about it yet, but it seems clear the boundary is weakening. Without the augurs, there will be no way to strengthen it against whatever threats are beyond.
Davian hesitated.
And I do want to help with that, he admitted. But the invasion hadn't started when I was in Thrindar.
Driskin wasn't lying, but he clearly wasn't telling Davian everything either.
True, said Driskin. I suppose that has been a more recent shift in our focus. Originally, our aim was simply to gather the augurs, to keep them hidden from administration, let them learn from one another. Then, to eventually pave the way in the assembly for the treaty to be changed. Maybe have the augurs return to a semblance of power one day.
He shrugged.
Ultimately, that's still our goal.
Davian stared at Driskin in bemusement, thinking back to some of his conversations with Weir.
I don't know much about politics, but that doesn't sound like something that could happen anytime soon.
Maybe not in my lifetime, he said quietly.
It was always a long-term plan, admitted Driskin, unfazed by Davian's pessimism. But as it happens, this invasion may have changed that. Thousands have died, and as awful as that is, it has also reminded people of how important the gifted are.
He leaned forward.
The way the king has been acting towards us over these past few weeks is starting to make people nervous. It's shining a light on the fact that Andara's most powerful weapon, its best defense, could be made impotent by one man's prejudice. When all this is over, I guarantee that there will be an argument for changing that. Renewed support for the Tolls, both in the assembly and amongst the people. Andara may not like us, but they are beginning to recognize our value. And the more that happens, the more sway we will have.
Davian gave a slow nod.
That's good for Tol Shen. It doesn't mean anyone will feel differently toward the augurs, though, he noted. When we tell everyone that the augurs are the only ones who can seal the boundary, I suspect that may change too, said Driskin. It should be enough to have the treaty amended, to remove the ban. That's more progress than we could have dreamed of a few months ago.
Davian leaned back, heart rate increasing a little as he assessed what Driskin was saying. Much still had to go right, but he couldn't see any flaws in the logic. It was possible.
And if that happens, you want the augurs to be overseen by Tol Shen. You want me to join Tol Shen,
he concluded after a moment, enthusiasm suddenly waning again. Driskin nodded.
The Athian and Shen councils are too at odds to work together on something like this, and any association with Athian is political poison at the moment. The augurs need to be unified, allied with somebody reliable, if the assembly is to ever take them seriously. Tol Shen is the only realistic option.
Davian shook his head, unable to hide his reluctance. It all seemed perfectly reasonable, and yet he knew Tol Shen's reputation. They were power-hungry, manipulative. The idea of their exerting any measure of control over a group of augurs, over him, made him uncomfortable.
No, he said after a moment. He glanced at Ishell. Once these invaders have been defeated, I will work with you to fix the boundary. But that's all. I don't want to join Shen.
Ishell made a face.
Because we're all evil, I assume? She said, sounding more amused than annoyed. That's what they teach you in Athian, isn't it? That Tol Shen are more interested in power than what's right. While every single gifted from Tol Athian is a shining beacon of the standards of El himself?
Driskin spoke up before Davian could respond, making a calming gesture in Ishell's direction.
You've grown up in an Athian school, and you're reluctant. I understand.
He rubbed his forehead.
If you are concerned about the types of people you associate with, though, perhaps you should take another look at your friend Tayris Sar before coming to a decision.
Davian flushed.
You're talking about what he did 3 years ago? That's a poor example to choose, Elder Thrall. I was the boy he rescued. He saved my life by killing those men. Hardly a black mark against him in my book.
Driskin shook his head.
But you don't know the whole story, he said quietly. Haven't you ever wondered where you came from? Before the school, I mean.
Davian stared at the elder, puzzled.
Of course I have. We think that Tayris knows, said Driskin. What we do know is that he is the one who brought you to Kaladel as a child, who dropped you at the school's doorstep. He's followed you. Followed your progress your entire life. It was no coincidence that he found you in Desriel, nor that he was there that day 3 years ago.
Davian shook his head again. He would have told me something like that, he said, with more confidence than he felt.
There's more, said Driskin. He set up that encounter in Kaladel, Davian. He told those men you were from the school. He wanted them to attack you, so that you would be forced to defend yourself, to discover you had powers.
Davian scowled, his head spinning.
I don't believe that.
It couldn't be true, though there was no black smoke nor any pain in his temples to indicate Driskin was lying. Davian snorted, ignoring the sudden sick feeling in the pit of his stomach.
How could you possibly have information like that?
Ishell shifted.
You surely didn't think I'd miss the opportunity to read you and your companions back at Thrindar. There wasn't time to get everything from him, but Tayris was far too preoccupied finding a way out of Desriel to worry about shielding himself.
Her lips curled upward.
I know what you were thinking when you bumped into me, too, by the way.
She winked at him, and he felt himself blush furiously. Davian took a few seconds to recover, then shook his head.
No. Either you're mistaken or this is some sort of trick. Tayris isn't like that.
Driskin sighed as he saw Davian's defiant expression.
Perhaps this is something you need to resolve for yourself. And how can I do that exactly?
Ask him.
Ishell stepped forward, placing her hand on his shoulder. You know how to see whether people are deceiving you. I've watched you do it for the last few minutes. You know we're not lying to you, Davian. You owe it to yourself to at least find out if we're right.
Davian gritted his teeth. He still wanted to argue the point, but he knew it would just look like he was being unreasonable.
No matter what I find, it won't change my mind about Tol Shen, he said, a little defensively now.
I don't understand.
Where else would you go? Ishell crossed her arms. You don't know anyone at Tol Athian, even if they were willing to take you in. The only other survivor from the school was Torin Andrus, and you can be certain he won't be spending his time around the gifted.
How did you...
Davian trailed off, grimacing.
Oh. Well, if you know that, then you know we're friends. I can do more by working with Torin, than I could by joining Tol Shen anyway.
Driskin shook his head.
Don't delude yourself on that front, lad, he said, his tone gentle. He's a prince of the realm, the North Warden's son. You might be friends, but whatever passed between you at the school, don't imagine you're equals. Even if he wants to welcome you at the palace gates with open arms, he won't be able to.
Davian frowned.
Meaning if you stay in the city to aid Prince Torin, you'll be forever hiding, living your life in the shadows. It will be years before he can afford to be publicly associated with an augur, regardless of how soon the treaty is changed. Years before he can acknowledge your existence.
He looked at Davian with a serious expression.
Your influence would be limited at best. It would be a waste of your talents.
Davian gave Driskin an angry stare. The elder's argument was sound, but it wasn't what Davian wanted to hear. He'd assumed that once he made it to Ilin Ilan, made contact with Weir, things would work out somehow, that he'd find a way to stay, to help the only friend he had left. Driskin sighed as he watched Davian's expression.
You are not convinced. That's fine. Perhaps we can change your mind in time. You at least agree that the boundary needs to be sealed?
Davian nodded slowly.
Yes. Good. Driskin stood. Then do what you must for now. Go to Ilin Ilan. Help where you can. But think about what I've told you. And once these invaders are defeated, come and find me at Tol Shen. If you still want only to seal the boundary and return to Ilin Ilan, then there will be no pressure to join us permanently. You have my word.
He nodded to Davian, then gave Ishell a tight smile. Without further pleasantries, he left the room. There was a long silence as Davian and Ishell looked at each other awkwardly.
Am I free to leave?
Asked Davian eventually, his irritation at the way he'd been treated bubbling to the surface again, making him sound ruder than he meant to be. Ishell held up her hands in mock defense.
You are. But I thought perhaps a full stomach might make you a little less prickly, she said, with a smile to show she was only teasing.
She gestured to some buttered bread on a tray next to the bed.
You must be hungry. You should eat.
Davian gave the tray a mistrustful glance. Ishell laughed as she saw his expression.
Nothing unusual in the bread, I swear it.
Davian thought about refusing the offer, but at that moment his stomach growled. He hadn't eaten since the small amount of drugged food he'd managed to ingest, and it would look petty. And he may not get another opportunity to eat properly until he reached Ilin Ilan. Scowling, he took a cautious bite of the bread. When he was still able to move his arms and legs satisfactorily, he wolfed down the rest, all the while watching Ishell with a wary expression. Despite her apparently having intended him no harm, he couldn't bring himself to trust her again so soon. He finished, wiping his mouth with his sleeve.
I'll be on my way, he said, standing. I've wasted too much time as it is.
Ishell frowned.
To Ilin Ilan? Tonight? Surely you need some rest.
She gestured to the bed.
You can have this room free of charge if you like.
She grinned, a dimple appearing in each cheek.
as compensation for being drugged.
Thanks, said Davian in a wry tone, but I don't need it.
Michelle kept smiling, unfazed.
How about we make a deal? To show you there are no hard feelings, at least take a free meal. A proper meal. No drugs, and my company for the evening.
Davian snorted. You almost had me until the last part. Michelle continued to smile at him cheerfully, and he wilted, sighing. A proper meal was too good to pass up.
Very well, he said reluctantly, making a weary gesture in the direction of the door. Lead the way.
They made their way downstairs into the common room. The innkeeper, a short, rotund woman of middle age, was soon bringing them their meals. When Michelle offered to pay, the innkeeper refused, insisting that Michelle's coin was no good to her. Michelle shrugged at Davian's questioning glance.
I've been here a month. She likes me.
Your knowing exactly what she's thinking has helped, I'm sure, observed Davian. He'd seen the thin lines of Khan stretching from Michelle to the innkeep. Minute, almost unnoticeable, but definitely there. His new companion had been reading her.
Nothing wrong with that.
Davian snorted, shaking his head. Malshash had been clear about this, but it was barely more than common sense, common decency. Michelle looked at him with genuine surprise.
You disagree?
Davian gave an emphatic nod.
Yes. These people, regular people, they have no way of defending themselves against us. What right do we have to go prying inside their most personal thoughts?
Michelle shook her head.
You haven't read many people, have you? Most of them deserve everything that's coming to them.
She sighed, waving away his scowl.
Don't pout. I'm not asking you to do it.
Their meals arrived, and the two began eating. They were silent for a while, then Davian paused as he saw Michelle looking at him with a curious expression. She smiled, leaning back and dabbing at her mouth with her napkin.
So, tell me about Kaladel, she said.
She waved her hand impatiently as Davian gave her a wary look.
Not the attack. I know all about that. What was it like, growing up in an Athian school?
She shook her head.
I always thought it would be so boring.
Davian sucked in his breath. It stung to hear the destruction of the school mentioned so flippantly.
I'd prefer not to talk about it, he said, trying unsuccessfully to keep the stiffness from his voice.
Michelle grimaced when she saw his expression. Her shoulders slumped a little.
I'm sorry, she said after a few awkward moments. I know I can be blunt. Driskin says I rely on my abilities so much I don't really know how to talk to people anymore. Maybe he's right.
Davian hesitated. She sounded uncomfortable, genuinely embarrassed. He paused for a few more seconds, then sighed, leaning forward. It wasn't boring. He took a mouthful of food, chewing as he thought. He swallowed. There was always a lot to do, studying, practicing. He scratched his head. Sometimes we got sent outside of the school to run errands. Michelle raised an eyebrow.
I think you and I have different definitions of boring, she said with a gently mocking smile.
Despite that, Davian thought he could detect a hint of gratitude in her tone. He shook his head in chagrin.
I'm not explaining it very well. My friends were there, he clarified. It was simple. The school was my home.
It may sound monotonous. It was monotonous, I suppose. But for the most part, I loved my life there. With another twinge of sadness, he realized just how true that statement was. Michelle shook her head.
I cannot imagine being forced to stay in the one place all those years, she admitted. It sounds like just another prison, barely any different to what the tolls must have been like during the sieges. Essence and Khan are both dull unless you can go out into the real world and actually use them.
Davian leaned forward, glad of the shift in conversation.
I take it you weren't a student at one of the Shen schools then. You never got the mark? Because if you had, there wouldn't have been much choice in the matter, he added dryly. No, thank the fates. Ishell gave him a half-apologetic shrug. I work in the kitchens at Tolshan when I'm not out with Driskin trying to find other augurs. But Driskin always made sure I didn't draw enough essence to be bound by the tenets. Ishell frowned. You did, though, I take it?
Davian hesitated, then nodded.
I don't remember it, but yes.
He fell silent as he thought about that day, thought about what Driskin had told him earlier. He had a sudden urge to ask Ishell exactly what she'd seen when she had read Tayrus, but he knew that whatever the answer, he wouldn't believe a word of it until he spoke to Tayrus himself. The moment passed, and Ishell evidently sensed that Davian didn't want to speak further on the subject. The conversation turned to lighter things as they ate, and for a while, Davian actually found himself relaxing. Soon enough, though, their plates were cleared, and he remembered the long journey he had ahead. He sighed. He still mistrusted Ishell, but the meal had been a pleasant respite from the road.
I should go soon, he observed. Before I do, though, is there anything else you can tell me about this invasion?
Ishell shrugged. It might have been Davian's imagination, but he thought he saw a flash of disappointment on her face.
The Andaran army was about to meet the invaders, last I heard. Hopefully that will be the end of it.
Davian shook his head.
No. A while back I saw something. The invaders camped outside Alin Ilan. That's why I'm trying to get back there. If there is going to be a siege, they will need all the help they can get.
He raised an eyebrow at her.
You could come. Two of us could make a real difference.
Ishell hesitated.
No, she said slowly. I don't think that's for me.
Davian made a face, but nodded, having not really expected a different response.
Have you heard if the king is going to change the first tenet, to let the gifted fight?
Ishell shook her head.
Nothing beyond what Driskin said earlier. King Andras has made some strong statements against the gifted in the past few weeks. If those are anything to go by, it's not likely.
Her eyes narrowed.
You have been isolated, haven't you? Tell me, Davian, in truth, where did you disappear to? How did you do it?
Her eyes burned bright with curiosity. Davian grimaced. He had no desire to talk about Dylanus. He could see the determination in Ishell's eyes, though, her desire to know how he'd escaped her for so long. He quickly came to a decision.
Let's trade. If you tell me how to make myself invisible, I'll tell you how I avoided your tracking.
Ishell considered for a moment.
You first.
Davian smiled, knowing he had her hooked.
Not a chance. Nothing else you want to know more?
Invisibility, Davian replied in a firm tone. Ishell sighed.
Very well, she played with her fringe idly. It's not terribly difficult, once you get the hang of it. Encase yourself in a Khan shield, but rather than have the Khan absorb essence, make it redirect it. A little like when you draw it out of the environment, I suppose. Bend it around yourself so it's as if the essence is passing through empty space.
She grinned.
It was an accident, to be honest. Driskin and I were testing ways of deflecting attacks one day, and surprise!
She made a dramatic gesture.
Driskin nearly had a heart attack.
Davian smiled.
I can only imagine.
Ishell grinned.
Driskin thinks it works by bending the light, she continued. The essence drags it around the shield rather than letting it through.
Davian glanced around at the other occupants of the room. I probably shouldn't test it right now, he said regretfully.
Try it on an object. Something small so no one notices, suggested Ishell.
Davian gave her an approving look, then concentrated. He covered his bowl in a tight mesh of Khan, then altered its properties so that it redirected essence as the shell had suggested. Nothing happened. Davian adjusted the hardness of the Khan a little, making it act almost like a mirror. The bowl wavered in front of him, then vanished. Davian's eyes widened, and he felt himself grinning. This could be useful, he mused. Ishell beamed.
You have no idea, she said with a wink.
She leaned forward.
Your turn.
Davian looked her in the eye.
I've changed my mind, actually.
Ishell gaped at him for several seconds.
You lied to me?
She eventually choked out in quiet, outraged disbelief.
Fair is fair, replied Davian cheerfully. You should have been checking. And anyway, you drugged me. I think we might be even now.
Ishell stared at him, caught between shock, annoyance, and amused chagrin.
You're serious. You're not going to tell me.
Davian shrugged. Perhaps we can make a new deal. I'll tell you if you come to Alin Ilan. Ishell looked at him through narrowed eyes.
Tempting if I thought you would hold up your end of the bargain.
She shook her head, smile rueful.
I suppose I'll just have to wait until Tol Shen to get it out of you then.
She hesitated, looking him in the eye, suddenly serious.
Speaking of which, you are going to come, aren't you?
Davian inclined his head. As soon as this invasion has been defeated. But as I said, it will just be until we figure out how to seal the boundary. They both stood. Thank you for the meal, Davian added sincerely.
Ishell nodded. Thank you for the company, she said with a small smile, apparently willing to forgive his deception. And keep safe. I don't want you dying until I get that answer from you.
She nodded towards the stairs.
If you change your mind about staying the night, you can have the room upstairs. First on the left. It's paid for until tomorrow, and I thought you might like somewhere familiar to sleep.
She flashed a pretty smile at him, and then before he could respond, spun on her heel and disappeared out the door. Davian stared after her for a moment, not sure whether to be irritated or amused. He shook his head, but despite his best efforts, he felt a small smile force its way onto his face. Still smiling, he walked up the stairs to the room, shutting and locking the door behind him. He had no intention of staying the night, but before he left, he was going to take advantage of the lamplight and the comfortable bed. He was going to keep searching through his book for information about Arkhine Devade. Chapter 45. Davian lay on the bed, opening the book he had taken from the Great Library and flipping through to where he'd left off, rescanning the pages as he went for any clue as to why the advisor had picked it out. He was almost to the end of the thick tome, and thus far the book had been exactly what it seemed, a collection of old fables, interesting enough but meaningless as far as he could tell. A few pages in tonight, though, a small picture at the beginning of one of the stories caught his eye. Frowning, he studied it carefully. The image was of a soldier. Whereas most of the other drawings he'd seen in the book were rudimentary, even fanciful, this one was detailed, as if the soldier had actually posed for the picture. The man's armor was shaded so that it had a dark aspect to it, but the headpiece was what caught Davian's eye. There were no gaps for eyes, and over the face, a soul symbol was inscribed. Three S lines, drawn vertically and circled. The same symbol he'd seen in his vision. Hands shaking slightly, he moved on to what was written beneath. Hail, King of Traitors. We who knew you mourn what was lost. Only a shadow remains. A whisper where once a shout, a pond where once an ocean, a flickering candle where once the sun itself. Hail, King of Corruption. We who serve you despair for what is to come. You will break the oath, you will shatter the path, you will sing the song of days as a dirge. Your people will weep tears of ice and blood, and only the fallen will know peace. He flipped slowly to the beginning of the story and began to read. The Impossible Tasks of Alares Shar, translated from the original High Darisian. In the Shining Lands, the immortal king Alares Shar once reigned. He was known as one of the great kings, perhaps the great king. He forged a treaty with the vicious northern Kitir. He led the final battle against the Darklands and was victorious, sealing their domain away from the mortal world forever. He was wise in his rulings, swift and decisive in dispensing justice, and beloved by his people. Much was his immortality discussed. Steel could not pierce his skin, fire did not burn him, and his bones did not break. No one knew the source of his longevity, but of all the mages in the Shining Lands, he was the most powerful. One day, Alares heard of a new power rising to the east, a king who had united the lands of Kal and Darithmar. He determined to seek out this new king. He hoped to discover an ally, but the reports he had heard of the new king's victories disturbed him greatly, and so he held out little hope. He rode for many miles and eventually came to the great city of Kist. Once beautiful and proud, the buildings now lay mostly in ruins, and the people stared blankly at Alares as he rode by, their clothes little more than rags, their stomachs distended by lack of food. The dead lay in the street next to piles of refuse. Though they had been the Shining Land's sworn enemies, Alares wept when he saw what had befallen Kal's people. By the time he reached the palace itself, Alares was filled with a burning anger. His eyes blazed with righteous fury as he was led before the man who had conquered Kal, and who now did so little for its people. The man on the throne of Kal was not what Alares had expected. As a man, he was impressive, tall, strong, and handsome. The new king looked every inch a warrior, a hero. But as Alares looked at him, he seemed to shimmer, to pulse and fade with a strange, otherworldly energy. He seemed more an ethereal being, an apparition, rather than a mortal. Still, Alares was unafraid, and what he had seen in the city was still fresh in his mind. He stood before the throne proudly, waiting for the king to address him as was proper. But the shimmering man simply watched him, until Alares could take the silence no longer. "I am Alares Shar, King of the Shining Lands." He paused, but the man on the throne said nothing. "I had come to see if a bond of friendship could be forged between our lands. But I have seen the state of Kist. I have seen her people's suffering and cannot fathom the reason for it. Why do you not help them?" Still there was silence. Just when Alares had determined to leave and return home, the shimmering man spoke.
"I am Gash, seer of the White Temple, herald of Shemeloth. The ones of which you speak are beyond saving. This I have seen."
"How can you say this?" cried Alares in frustration.
"I have seen the destruction of those who still live here," replied Gash. "I have seen what is to come. To help them now would be wasteful."
Alares did not understand.
"If you see their destruction, then why not save them?" "Because what has been seen cannot be undone. No efforts of yours or mine can change their fate."
"I cannot accept that," said Alares stubbornly.
"And yet you must," said Gash. "For I have long known your fate too, Alares Shar. The Shining Lands will fall, and you will come to serve me willingly. Together, we are to conquer the world."
Alares laughed, and Gash saw that he would not easily be convinced.
"Allow me to prove what I say," he said. "I will set you three tasks. If you can complete any of the three, I will withdraw from these lands. If you cannot fulfill even one, though, you will serve me, and the Shining Lands shall be mine."
Alares replied, "I cannot accept this challenge without first knowing what tasks you will set." Gash nodded.
"So be it," he said. "Here are the tasks I would give you. First, to find a subject worthy of your kingship. Second, to find a man worthy of your friendship. And third, to find a woman worthy of your love."
Alares laughed.
"These are weighty tasks indeed, mighty Gash. How long might you wait for me to complete them?"
Gash smiled.
I am like you, Alaris, untouched by time. Search for however long you need. I know you to be a man of honor. Once you know a task to be impossible, you will tell me. Until then, I will not move against your realm.
He paused.
I ask only that you speak of your quest to no one, including those whom you bring here. Should you do this, I will know, and will consider all three tasks to have been failed.
Alaris thought for a long time, but could not see any reason to refuse.
I accept, he said.
They bound the bargain in blood, and it was witnessed by Gash's court under the old law. Wasting no time and confident of his success, Alaris returned to the Shining Lands full of hope. Many years passed, and Alaris finally found a man he thought more worthy a subject than any he had seen before. A warrior named Jadlus, fiercely loyal and brave. Alaris traveled with Jadlus back to Kist, coming before Gash, his spirits high.
Mighty Gash, he said, I have successfully completed your first task. This man is named Jadlus. His skill is immense. His bravery is unquestionable. His loyalty is fierce and endless. He is a subject most worthy of my kingship.
Gash examined Jadlus silently for some time, and Alaris's confidence grew within him. Then Gash spoke.
As king, he said to Alaris, would you be willing to die for your people?
Of course, replied Alaris,
as any good king would. Then your subjects should be willing to die for you also.
Alaris hesitated.
Yes, he replied grimly.
Gash turned to Jadlus.
You would die for your king?
I would, replied Jadlus proudly.
And if he commanded you to die here and now?
Still,
Jadlus was unmoved.
Why?
For the love of my king, my country.
Gash shook his head.
No. You would because the readiness to do so brings you glory, respect in the eyes of your friends, your fellow soldiers, even your king. To be unwilling to die would be traitorous, cowardly. You are willing to die, but you do not want to die. It is simply preferable to the shame. You would die because there is not a better choice.
That is not true, said Jadlus stoically.
But it is, cried Gash.
Yet what if I told you there was a better way? A choice where you earned respect rather than shame for living.
Jadlus frowned.
If it is better for my king that I die, then there is always shame in living.
Gash smiled slyly.
Very well. Here is my offer, Jadlus. Your king has been given a task. It matters not if you do not complete this task for him, for he may try again. To fulfill this task, though, he will ask you to sacrifice your own life.
Then I will,
cried Jadlus. Gash held up his hand.
But what care has the king if he commands you to do this? Should he not love you as a subject, seek to keep you from harm if there is a better way? True, if you obey, then your king will have succeeded, and you will have died with honor.
He paused.
But if you refuse his command,
I will give to you these lands. I will make you king in your own right. Your wife will be your queen, your children your heirs. You can make peace with the Shining Lands, which I wish only to destroy. Men will honor you for your life, not your death.
Gash placed a hand on Jadlus's shoulder.
You fight to uphold the ideals of your king, and that is a fine lot. But you could be so much more, do so much more. Your king chose you because of your worthiness, your honor.
That is how I know there would be no better man as king of this realm.
Then Gash turned to Alares.
Now he knows what is at stake. Command him to kill himself.
Alares shook his head.
I will not.
Gash frowned.
There is no other way to fulfill this task. You are willing to make the ultimate sacrifice for your subjects. One worthy of your kingship must be willing to do the same.
Alares's heart was heavy now, but he knew Gash spoke truly.
Jutless, he said quietly, you are a true and loyal subject. I would ask that you take your life for this cause, for the sake of your king and the Shining Lands.
Jutless thought for a long time, then shook his head.
I am sorry, my king, but he is right. I can do more for the Shining Lands by living, he said to Alares.
Then he turned to Gash.
I accept your offer.
At those words, he fell dead to the floor.
The first task is failed, intoned Gash. The most loyal of your subjects refused your command and so was unworthy of your kingship.
Alares left without a word, disappointment and sorrow mixing a bitter taste in his mouth. 100 years passed, and eventually the pain of Alares's first defeat faded. He met a young man named Diadan, a noble of the Shining Lands who came into his inheritance early through tragic circumstances. With no family, Diadan had come to Alares for advice on how to manage his affairs. Alares was first a mentor to Diadan, then, after a few years, a true friend. Despite Alares's many years, his body had never aged, so he rarely found someone young enough to stay with him on the hunt and in dueling, but intelligent and wise enough to hold his interest in conversation. Yet Diadan excelled in all these areas and proved himself many times over to be a loyal and trustworthy friend, never seeking to betray Alares's trust for his own ends. Alares presided at Diadan's wedding, and Diadan became the king's right hand. Time passed. After 30 years of unwavering friendship, Alares decided that Diadan was the man to fulfill the second task. The two men journeyed to Kist and came before Gash.
Mighty Gash, said Alares, I bring before you a man with whom I have a bond stronger than stone, a man to whom I would entrust my life and whom I know would do the same to me, a man my equal in honor, in courage, my friend. This is Diadan.
Gash considered Diadan silently.
This is the one you would put forward to fulfill your second task.
Yes, replied Alares.
Gash turned to Diadan.
Your friendship with Alares is strong, Diadan nodded.
He is my brother in all but blood.
And yet, pointed out Gash, not by blood. He ages not. You do.
That is true, acceded Diadan. I cannot keep pace with him as once I did, but that is